Okay, good evening, everyone, and welcome. Today is March 6th, 2024, and we are together for our TDK Wednesday Night Learning. And this is series number five, I think, already. And there's a two-part series on Purim. We're not going to meet next week, but we will meet the week after that. And that will be that class will be taught by Gabi, who'll be teaching some really fascinating Midrashim on Purim, with a focus on how a Jewish person may read the text, as opposed to how a non-Jewish person may read the text. The text, of course, being Megillat Esther, and how there are different cues and clues that speak differently to different people upon reading the text. Now, tonight's topic is based on a fascinating midrash that says that the holiday of Purim, of all the holidays, maybe Yom Kippur as well, is going to exist forever, while the other chagim, the other holidays, are going to be nullified. And that is a really interesting statement, and a lot for us to figure out what that means. And then there's another statement that talks about the future of Megillat Esther, and whether it is going to always remain part of Jewish tradition in terms of reading it on a regular basis. So at first, perhaps the first thing that comes to your mind when you hear a statement like this, that the holiday of Purim, that all the other chagim are going to be nullified, sort of raises your you raises the question of, what is that? How is that possible? Right? We have this. We believe in this notion that the Torah is forever, right? And that the mitzvot of the Torah are forever. This is not to be confused with mitzvot that are temporarily suspended, like all the mitzvot dealing with the Beit HaMikdash, right? We believe that they're still enforced conceptually, but they are temporarily suspended because there is no Beit HaMikdash. But that does not mean that they are batel, right? It does not mean that they are nullified. On the other hand, this statement that we're going to read in a few minutes seems to indicate that, in fact, it's going to be nullified not because of any specific temporary circumstances, but it's not going to be temporary. It's going to be it's going to be permanent. So let's jump into these statements and see what they say. I want to welcome Marsha, who just jumped on, and Yitzi Wolf, who just jumped on. Nice to have you both. And here we go. So we have source number one from the Midrash Mishlei, which says as follows: Kol ha-moadim atidim b'telim. V'imei ha-purim einam b'telim la'olam. So there it is in black and white. All of the holidays will in the future be batel, nullified. But the days of Purim will not be nullified. And then the Midrash quotes a pasuk from Megillat Esther: Bimei ha-purim ha'ele lo ya'avru mitoch ha-yehudim. And these days of Purim will not go away, right, from amongst the Jews. And that is from Esther chapter 9. Amar Rabbi Elazar, af Yom HaKippurim eino batel la'olam. He adds that Yom Kippur is also not going to be amongst the holidays that are nullified. Shene'emar, quoting a pasuk that says, L'chukat olam, that Purim is a forever rule, a forever law. So we're not going to, at this point, define what batel means other than nullify. Towards the end, we'll see how some people have understood batel. We're just going to take it at face value for now. Now, we also have a similar statement regarding Megillat Esther. This is the Gemara in the Talmud Yerushalmi, in the Jerusalem Book, and also Masechet Megillah. Also Masechet Megillah, that says, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Hanevi'im Vaktuvim Atidin Libatel. The prophets and the writings are going to eventually also be nullified. The Chameshet Sifrei Torah Einam Betelim. But the five books of the Torah are not going to be batel. The Chumash is not going to be batel. So that sort of is a twin statement to the one above, where the one above said that Purim was going to be batel, and this statement says that.
We'll see if this one can get loud.
And this statement says that Esther is going to be batel. Okay, I'm going to mute everyone, and if you would like to say something, just to unmute yourself. Okay. Welcome in, Miriam and Ben. Okay. So, I'll stop for a minute and ask, right? What do you think this midrash is saying, right? It's very strange that, let's just start with Purim, right? Source number one, that Purim, that all the other Chagim are going to be batel except for Purim. What do you make of that? Why is Purim special? Yes, Marsha.
Because if it hadn't been for Queen Esther and Mordecai, there wouldn't have been any Jews.
Okay, great. So maybe it's a function of, as the Gemara says, that this was Mimavet L'chayim, right? That the Purim miracle saved at least the Jews who were under Ahasuerus's rule, which is not all of the Jews of the world, I don't think, from certain death. Okay, what about this notion that the Moadim are going to be batel? Right, it's one thing to understand why Purim is not going to be, but how do we make sense out of this notion that the other Chagim are going to go away? Anyone have any thoughts on that?
So I would venture to say that there's something about the Moadim that are this worldly that we need for as long as we're in pre-restoration / pre-messianic times that will no longer be necessary once we're redeemed, whether it's the proximity to God or the format of life as it will be, etc. But it's intriguing that there's something about Purim that we can't let go of that I've always found to be intriguing.
Okay, thank you, Rabbi. So I was going to save this till the end, but let's do it now because Rabbi Gerson is echoing a fascinating statement by the Maharal. Rabbi Gerson is saying, which is what the Maharal is saying, is let's take this at face value. The Midrash says that the holiday is going to be batel. So let's understand, let's take it at face value. That's exactly what it means. We're not going to reinterpret that the word batel means, which is what some other people tried to do. We're going to say it is going to be batel. And listen to this, what I think is a radical statement of the Maharal. This is down here, which says Maharal Teferet Yisrael 53. Okay, he says as follows: Umeyatahit ba'er ma'shamar mitzvot betelot. There's another rabbinic source that talks about certain mitzvot that are going to be nullified. Hu lizman hatichia. This refers to zman hatichia is Maharal talk for messianic period, exactly as Rabbi Gerson said. Umikom makom ein lomar bazek klal shatorah chas v'shalom tia betila. It's not that the Torah is going to be nullified. We can't say that. That would be, you know, heretical. It also sounds heretical to say that certain mitzvot are going to be nullified, but the Maharal is going to defend that position. Shimkei le'alo lomar zot omrot ha'Torah tia betila. If the rabbinic statement meant that the Torah was going to be batel, then instead of saying that certain mitzvot were going to be nullified, it would have said that the Torah is going to be nullified. Aval amar mitzvot betelot latid. But instead it says certain mitzvot are going to be nullified in the future. Shelo yehyeh b'signon zeh shehem atah. That period of time is not going to be similar to what it is now. Ki haTorah, listen to this, he seder olam hazeh. The Torah is set up specifically to work in this world. This world meaning pre-messianic. Kemosha b'yarnu. Aval izman haTichiyah. But in the messianic time, in the messianic time, hold on one second, just trying to control the screen here a little bit. Aval izman haTichiyah, hu olam haba. Olam haba should not be confused with what we think olam haba is in terms of this, where our souls live. Olam haba here means the messianic period. The ein lo seder olam hazeh. It's going to be a totally different world. L'chach mitzvot haTorah yu betelim. Therefore, the mitzvot, all the mitzvot, some of the mitzvot are going to be batel. Gefi mashu seder olam haTichiyah. The mitzvot are going to be batel in consonance, in a way that is that works within the context of the new world. That should not be confused with nullifying the Torah. Ki haTorah kolelet seder kol hamitziyut. V'gam b'Torah nirmaz seder hamitziyut shulizman haTichiyah mashiyah. The Torah also tells us what the world is going to be like when Mashiach comes. The Torah, which is the overall framework of what the world is, what our responsibilities are in the world, that's going to maintain, but certain mitzvot are not. So when I first saw this, and still, I mean, this is a really radical thing for the Maharal to say, right? To say that there's going to come a time where the mitzvot are just, some of the mitzvot are just not going to be applicable anymore because times, they are changing and they're not going to be needed, or they're not going to be consistent with what's needed. I'm not exactly sure what it means. I will tell you that there is a contemporary sort of twist on this in Israel. Right? And the twist is that while the Jews were in exile, a lot of ritual was needed to maintain Jewish identity and Jewish individual identity and Jewish national identity. But now that there's a state of Israel, a Jewish state, where the calendar is Jewish and the culture is Jewish, some people argue that the rituals are not necessary anymore because they're not needed to maintain national identity. Now, there are lots of arguments against that, but it's not so far off from what the Maharal is saying. There will come a time where some mitzvot are not going to be needed because of the conditions that the Mashiach and the Messianic era are going to bring. It's a fascinating concept. And I quite radical, and the Maharal writes about it in a few places. But that's, I think, a fair, is the Maharal mirroring what you were saying, Rabbi? Okay. So Baruch Shekivanta. Okay, great. Let's now look at why it is. First, we'll start with Megillat Esther. Why it is that Megillat Esther is going to be around forever. And then we'll move on to why it is that Purim is going to be around forever. So let's start with Megillat Esther. We'll start with the Rambam, who doesn't tell us why, but who says it. Kol Sifrei HaNeviim V'chol HaKetuvim Atidin Libatel Limot HaMashiach Chutz Megillat Esther. All the books of the prophets and all the holy writings will be nullified in the Messianic era with the exception of the book of Esther. V'harei Hi Kayemet. she'enam v'telim lolam. Esther will remain, just like the five books of the Torah will remain, and just like the halakhot of the oral law, they will never be nullified. V'afalpi shekol zikron hatzarot yibutal sheneemar. Although all the memories of the difficulties endured by our people will be nullified, and he quotes a pasuk from Yeshayahu, ki nishkichu atzarot harishonot, v'chi nisteru me'enai, the former difficulties are going to be forgotten and will be hidden from my eye. Yimei Purim lo yibatlu, even though Purim has an element of a difficulty, that is not going to be nullified. We've quoted this pasuk already, and the days of Purim will not pass from among the Jews, nor will their remembrance cease from their sin. This is a significant source, because the original source where we said this was a Gemara in the Jerusalem Talmud. Not every Gemara is codified as halacha. There are lots of Gemarot, which we call Agadah, which are in the realm of Jewish ethical teachings, for example, or examples of events in the life of the Avot and the Imahot, or events in the lives of the rabbis of the Talmud. And not all of them are codified. But here, the Rambam codifies this halakha. Right? The Rambam believes this as a matter of halakha, something that has to happen. And he puts it in the laws of Megillah because it's connected to Megillat Esther. So all of the Nevi'im and Ketuvim are going to be batel. Again, we have to understand what that means, but Purim, Esther is special. Now you can imagine that these statements get some pushback. And so we'll see one of the Rambam's best known sparring partners, the Ravad from France, he does not like this at all. Amar Avraham, his name was Avraham. Lo yivatel davar mikola sefarim she'ein sefer she'ein bolimud. The Ravad says, how could the Rambam possibly say that a book of the Nevi'im is going to be nullified? There's something that we learn from every book. Every sefer Navi has something to teach us. How is it possible to nullify them? Aval kach amru. What does the Ravid say it means? Meaning the Ravid has to do something with the Gemara in the Yerushalmi. Right? The Gemara says they're going to be batel. And the Rambam takes it at face value. But the Ravid says, no. We're misunderstanding what batel means. Batel means afilu yivatlu shar sfarim milikrot bahem migila lo tivatel milikrota b'tzibur. What does it mean when the Gemara says that all the books of the Nevi'im are going to be batel? That means we're not going to read them in public. But Megillat Esther, we will continue to read in public. So I don't know what that means. Does that mean we're not going to do Haftorahs anymore? I'm not sure. I guess it also sounds like we're not going to read Megillat Rut. We're not going to read Shir HaShir. We're not going to read Kohelet. But we are going to read Esther. But what the Ravad is saving, he's saying, it can't mean batel, because we still need these books around to learn the lessons that they contain. Okay, so let's stop there for a second and just see if any comments or questions. We have this statement by the Gemara in the Yerushalmi that Esther, that all the books of the Nevi'im are going away except for Esther. The Rambam seems to take it at face value, and the Ravid sort of reinterprets what batel means. Anyone else have an idea maybe of what this Gemara can mean besides what the Ravid says and besides what the Rambam says, that literally they're going to go away, and the Ravid says that they're not going to go away, we're just not going to read them in public? Anyone else have perhaps an explanation what the Gemara could possibly mean when it says that all the books of the Bible except for the five books of the Torah and Esther are going to be nullified? Any thoughts?
Rabbi Serena here.
Go ahead, Serena.
Just hold on a minute. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, perfect.
I feel unsettled by the entire topic. like Kimitzion Tetzei Torah, the whole world is going to be Torah observant, and our magnificent Mashiach is going to help make that happen. And even the non-Jews will, you know, my house will be a house of prayer for all people, etc. And then Jesus comes along and says, no, my new document nullifies that whole thing. And we say, no, you just proved that you were not a real prophet. Bye.
Okay. Yeah, it is a shocking statement, which is why so far, when it comes to the Megillah, this is why the Ravid has to reinterpret this. Precisely because of your concern. We haven't yet gotten to Purim itself, and why, what all, and the Maharal says that when the real Mashiach comes, certain of the mitzvot are not going to be relevant. I think that's what he's saying for the time. But others reinterpret it, and we'll get to that. We'll get to that a little bit later. But yeah, it's a radical statement. And now we're in this reinterpretation mode, which is one of the things that Jews do when there are texts which we find difficult, right? One of the things we do, and we talked about this when we talked about murder in the Bible, the last class in Rabbi Sachs's chapter, that one of the things that we have always done with difficult passages was reinterpret. That's our first line of defense against passages that we find difficult. We don't reject, we reinterpret. So we reinterpreted an eye for an eye. We reinterpreted how it's possible to give a death penalty. We reinterpret what it means to wipe out a whole nation, men, women, and children, right? That's what we have done. And that's what the Raiva does here. He reinterprets. It simply means that we're not going to read them in public. Why? Okay, we're going to explain why in a moment. So great question, Serena. You are. That's the question that we are dealing with. So I want to share with you a really interesting Gemara and follow that up with a comment that explains the importance of this Gemara in relation to what we are doing. So there's a Gemara that records a statement about Reish Lakish's son. The Gemara says, the two Ashkechei Rabbi Yochanan liyanuke de Reish Lakish de Yativa Amar. Reish Lakish's, Rabbi Yochanan found Reish Lakish's son was sitting and studying, and he came up with a, he was interpreting a verse, okay? And the verse was, Ivelet Adam tisalef darko v'af Hashem yizaf libo. The foolishness of a man perverts his ways, and his heart frets against the Lord. Meaning, people do something which is their fault, and then something happens to them, and they wonder and complain why it happened. So I guess human nature, right? It's hard to sometimes take responsibility for our actions. So then Rabbi Yochanan says, Yatir Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan was sitting there, Vika Matma, and he wondered. He sat down and wondered aloud about this verse, saying, is there anything that is written in the writings that is not alluded to in the Torah at all? Meaning, I can't think, he said, of anything in the Torah that hints at this idea. Rabbi Yochanan was under the impression that anything in the Nevi'im has some allusion, it's alluded to somehow in the Torah itself. But he was at a loss here. Where is this verse alluded to in the Torah? And of course, as you would expect, the young son of Reish Lakish says, I got it. Is that to say that this idea is really not alluded to in the Torah? But isn't it written with regard to Joseph's brothers, and their heart failed them, and they turned trembling to another, saying, what is this that God has done to us. Right? I mean, that the reason they were in this trouble is because they sold Yosef to begin with. But they didn't admit that. And they simply said, God's doing something and we don't know why. Which is exactly what the Pasuk means, right? And and Rabbi Yochanan was very impressed with this young boy. So what does it have to do with our story, right? We're trying to figure out how it's possible that the Gemara can say that Megillat Esther is going to be nullified. I'm sorry, that all the Nevi'im and the Ketuvim are going to be nullified except for Megillat Esther. So based on this Gemara, Rabbi Moshe Alshich says the following. This is really a fascinating tidbit. First, a little bit about Rabbi Moshe Alshich. I'll give you his years. Rabbi Moshe Alshich was born in 1508, and he died in Svat in 1593. A little bit about his bio. He was a biblical commentator, and he wrote a biblical commentary, which we're going to read a part of now. He was born in the Ottoman Empire and died in Eretz Yisrael. He's most known for a commentary on the Torah, and similar to the Abarbanel, he begins his commentary by asking a series of questions, which he anticipates would bother the reader, and then he writes an essay summarizing his views to answer the questions. A lot of references to Talmud and to Midrash and to Zohar in his commentary. And he also references earlier Torah scholars, many Rishonim, including the Ralbag and the Rambam. Okay, so he's also wondering about this question, and he quotes the Gemara that we just quoted, that everything, the assumption is that everything in the Nevi'im is alluded to in the Torah. And then he says right here, V'navo el ha'inyan. I hope you could see where I highlighted the text. V'navo el ha'inyan, v'hu. Ki bimot mishichenu, shenitmale ha'aretz de'a, navin le'ashurenu, mitoch ha'torah, kol mashke b'nevi'im v'ktuvim, v'alkein yitbatlu. What's going on here? This is really fascinating. The Alshich is saying that the Nevi'im don't teach us anything new. Everything in the Nevi'im is alluded to in the Torah. But we don't have the wisdom to figure out where in the Torah the messages of the Nevi'im are. So without the Nevi'im themselves, we would miss those messages. So that's why we need the Nevi'im. But, says the Alshich, in the time of Mashiach, when the world is going to be full of, as Serena said, Da'at Hashem, everyone's going to know God. We're going to be so much more spiritually attuned. We're not going to need the Nevi'im because the lessons of the Nevi'im are in the Torah, and then we're going to have the wisdom to draw out those lessons without needing them spoon-fed to us by the Nevi'im. V'alken yitbatlu. And that's why they're going to be batel. Ki lo yehiye lanu tzorech aleihem. We're not going to need them anymore. Not that the messages, and this goes to your point, Serena, not that the messages are going to be defunct, but we're going to know them through a different methodology. As opposed to having to learn them by opening up the Navi, we're going to learn them by opening up the Chumash. Except for Esther. Ach Megillah zo gam shegam hi remuza b'Torah kamram zal kulin kufla matet amadbet minayin lahaman min haTorah. First of all, we have a rabbinic tradition that the Book of Esther is alluded to in the Torah as well. Minayin la Esther min haTorah, and Esther's alluded to in the Torah, and Mordechai's alluded to in the Torah. K kimifurash etzleinu la'el. Im koze lo titpatel. Lukine amaramutenu megillah zayin amun alef. Shelo haya makom l'sanhedrin b'yamim ahem l'chtovet ha-megillah. That the Sanhedrin didn't want to include the Megillah in the collection of holy books. Ela shematzu b'Torah katuv zot zichron, zichron b'sefer shemot yudzayin yudalet. There were allusions that the rabbis thought were referring to Megillat Esther in the Torah. So since Megillat Esther is referred to in the Torah, and just like the Torah is not going to be batel, also Esther is not going to be batel. But mostly what I'm interested in here is the Alshach's explanation as to how it could be that the Gemara in the Talmud Yerushalmi can possibly say such a radical thing that bothered all of us, and Serena put words to our concern, right, that it's going to be gone. It's not, the messages aren't going to be gone. The messages are in the Torah, and we'll be able to get them directly from the Torah. That is sort of part one about how we understand what the rabbis meant that the book of Esther will remain and the other books are going to be batel. The other books will be batel, as we said, because we'll learn their lessons another way. Esther sticks around because it's alluded to in the Torah. Esther is alluded to in the Torah. Mordechai is alluded to in the Torah. How can we possibly get rid of a book that directly alludes to that is alluded to in the Torah itself? Okay, let's stop here for any comments or questions, because now we have to get to perhaps which is the more difficult element, which is the Midrash that said the holiday of Purim itself is going to be nullified. Okay, any comments about what we've seen so far? Rabbi, I see you're unmuted.
It's very quiet in my house.
Okay, great. Any other comments? Serena, how are we doing? Are you feeling any better?
Yeah, I'm here.
Are you feeling any better about the answers?
No, I'm not. Sorry. Okay. But what if we batel a rabbi's commentary and keep the Torah because its author is more powerful than the rabbi who made a commentary? What if we didn't have to reinterpret what some rabbis said about the Torah? How can we even say such a heretical thing? What if we said, you just proved yourself, it must be that you're saying a metaphor or something, you know?
Right. So that's reinterpretation. And that's what the Alshach did. That's a metaphor. He reinterpreted it, meaning it's not going to go away. We're just not going to need them to learn the lessons anymore, right? The what's important about the Nevi'im? What's important about the Nevi'im is what we learn from them, the Alshach is arguing. And what we learn from them is that, you're right, that is sacrosanct. We have to understand what the Talmud Yerushalmi said as metaphor. We have to reinterpret it. It cannot be literal. It cannot be that we're going to, you know, go house to house and collect everyone's Tanakh and rip out the last two thirds, because either we're just not going to read them publicly, but we're still going to have to read them. That's one reinterpretation that we saw. Or the Alshach said, no, we're not even going to have to read them privately, not because they're unimportant and not because they are not forever books, but because the lessons of those forever books are going to be available to us directly from the Torah itself. It actually says something about the Nevi'im, which the Gemara says elsewhere, which is that the Nevi'im spoke for their time. Right? The Nevi'im were given to us for their time. And now we're going to be in a different time where, like we said earlier, this great knowledge where we're not going to need to put it a little bit irreverently, Navi is Torah for dummies, right? Everything the Navi says is in the Torah. We just can't figure it out, so we have the Navi spelling it out. So you're right. Again, Serena, they're both approaches reinterpret. Okay. What about Purim, right? We have this statement that Purim is going to be nullified. Let's go back and just reread that statement one more time. That's the first statement in our source sheet, where it says, Kol ha-moadim atidim b'teilim. You may have Purim einam b'teilim la'olam. Right? All of the holidays are going to be batel, except for Purim. And we have to understand now, what on earth does that mean? Okay, so let's first understand why Purim is going to stick around, and then we could go to the more difficult part, which is what does it mean that the other ones are going to be batel? So, there's a Gemara, I think this is Masechet Shabbat, I forgot to write where this is, Talmud Bavli in Shabbat, that talks about what happened at Har Sinai. And the Gemara says, based on this pasuk, in Shemot Perek Yudtet, Vayitatzvu b'tachtit ha'har, that the Jews stood at the foot of the mountain. Now here, the rabbis don't take this, well, they give us a different interpretation. Amar Rav Avdimi bar Chama bar Chasa, Milamed shekafa HaKadosh Baruch Hu aleihem et ahar kigigit. You may know this, the Rav Dimi said, this means that God took the mountain, he overturned it over the heads of Bnei Yisrael, like a tub, like a bucket, right? And he said, Vamar lahem, imatem mekablim haTorah mutan. If you accept the Torah, great. V'im lav, sham tehe kivuratchem. But if not, this is going to be a burial place, implying that I'm just going to drop this mountain over you, and you'll all be buried underneath. Okay? So, the Gemara then says, hold on a second. This is a huge problem. So before we read the Gemara, anyone want to anticipate? What's the problem with this statement? In terms of our understanding of Kabbalat HaTorah, what's the problem?
It wasn't elective. It was coerced.
Right. This was not Kabbalat HaTorah miratzon. This was not the acceptance of the Torah by our own free will. This was, we were compelled. And that's exactly what the Gemara says. It's amazing. The Gemara says, Amar Rava, af al pi, I'm sorry, Rav Acha bar Yaakov said, "Mikan moda'a rabba la'oraita." He said, "Rav Acha bar Yaakov, from here, there's a caveat on the obligation of the Torah. How could I be obligated to do something I was forced to do?" Fair question. This interpretation of the pasuk has also been reinterpreted, but not yet. Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov seems to understand this midrash literally, that God held the Torah over our heads and said, if you don't accept the Torah, I'm just going to bury you here. That's difficult. Comes along Rava and says, don't worry. Amar Rava, afal pikein hadur kabluha Bimei Achashverosh. The Jewish people accepted Torah again in the days of Achashverosh. Dichtiv, how do we know that? Pasuk says in the Megillah, Kimu v'kiblu ha-Yehudim. That the Jews, what did they do? They accepted and the Kimu, they fulfilled and accepted the Torah. So what does this mean? What does the Gemara say? Kimu mashekiblu kivar. They ordained what they had already taken upon themselves. Meaning they reaccepted. It was accepted once at Har Sinai, but that was under duress. And now it was reaccepted under free will, in circumstances of free will. So now, Well, what does this do to Purim? May I ask you, right? What does this do to our understanding of the holiday of Purim? Besides celebrating salvation, what is the Gemara telling us that Purim is?
It's a significant upgrade.
Right? It's Matan Torah 2.0, and the 2.0 is much better than the original version. Right, the original version was under duress. 2.0 is by our own free will. Now, just to bolster this point, just look at a few similarities between the Megillah and the Torah. This section probably belongs in the first half of the Shiur when we talk about Megillat Esther always sticking around. But here we have a pasuk in Megillat Esther 9:23, V'kibel ha-Yehudim et asher hechelu lasot. Kibel, even though the translation is Jews, it's Lashon Yachid. It's the Jews as a group, one unified group, which is echoed by the pasuk in Shemot, Vayichan Sham Yisrael. Not Vayachanu, that they, plural, but Vayichan, they, singular, as one group, encamped in front of the mountain. So we have in these two psukim, the sensitive reader sees that the Jewish people are referred to as one group in the singular, both in Esther and both in the Torah. A couple of other examples of this. We'll just jump to letter C. The halacha is that when you're writing a Megillah, it requires stirtut. Stirtut is the scoring of the page. If you've ever gotten close to a Torah, you may have noticed that there are lines which are engraved, scored into the parchment. And those lines guide the sofer. The Megillah requires sirtut as well. So we have this another similarity, not only linguistically and grammatically, but in terms of the physical way that the Torah has to be written and the Megillah has to be written, they are similar. I just brought those as a little sort of add-on to indicate that there's a similarity between Megillat Esther and the Torah, echoed again in the fact that they are both Kabbalat HaTorah, but the second Kabbalat HaTorah is an upgrade, as Rabbi Gerson said. Okay, I want to conclude with just two more sources. This is a really interesting conversation. This is from a book called Hegyonei Halacha, which you can see here, written by Rabbi Yehuda Mirsky, who was my teacher way back in the day in Beit Midrash LaTorah, BMT, in Yerushalayim. It doesn't exist. The yeshiva doesn't exist anymore. It was the original American gap year yeshiva program. Before this yeshiva existed, Americans could go to some of their Hesder yeshivot, but there was no program specifically designed for American high school graduates to come spend a year in Israel. And BMT, which was run by the Jewish Agency, was the first one of those programs, which are now, you know, there are literally dozens of them. Okay. So here Rabbi Mirsky is asking a question, right? How is it possible, we'll use Rabbi Gerson's words, how is it possible for us to say that Kabbalat HaTorah the second time around was an upgrade, right? The people who accepted the Torah the first time around, right? The another Gemara says that they saw at Har Sinai what the Malachei HaSharet, that what God's ministering angels themselves haven't seen. And they merited Yitziat Mitzrayim. Open miracles were done for them. The Ten Makot, Kriyat Yamsuf. Compare that to the generation of Achashverosh, where the Gemara tells us that the reason they got into this trouble to begin with was that they went to Achashverosh's party, and the story lacks any open miracle, which seems to indicate that the Jews weren't worthy of open miracles. So how is it possible, Rabbi Mirsky asks, to say that the first Torah, which was accepted under duress, was sort of a lower level? The people there were, on some level, greater than Malachi Asharet. They were all on the level of Nevi'im. And here Rabbi Mirsky offers a fascinating answer. He says the answer is actually embedded in the question. So can you see my cursor right here in the middle of the page? Yesh lahavchin. He says, in order to answer this question, we have to distinguish Yesh lahavchin ben dargatam shel Yisrael b'mamar ha-Sinai l'dargatam b'mei Achashverosh, between the spiritual level of the Jews at Sinai and their spiritual level in the time of Achashverosh. Yisrael b'Sinai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu yametalech b'kirbam, God was walking with them, right? There was a cloud of glory, a pillar of fire. Umarelahem nisim begilui, and revealed to them open miracles. Umitoch kach hitchazku b'emunatam, and because of that, their faith was made stronger. Shenemar, vayiru ha'am et Hashem. The people saw God, and what's the result? Vayaminu ba'Hashem Moshe Avdo. And then they believed in God. Lo kein me Achashverosh, but that is not the case in the days of Achashverosh. Bimimahim lo ra'u Yisrael nisim guluyim. There were no open miracles. Ulechol ha'korot otam bizman ahu siba hegyonit v'seder tivi shel hishtalshlut, and everything that happened could be explained naturally and through the normal course of real politic. Chazal ra'u b'lashon haster astir. Remez l'Megillat Esther. The rabbi saw in the pasuk in the Torah that says, "I will hide my face," as referring to the time of Esther, where God's face was hidden. Remez l'Megillat Esther. Shan Hagat Hashem Aita Sham B'Derech Shel Hester Panim. That God's interaction was not obvious. Mi Sheruim Et Hashkacha B'Tokef Givurata B'Makot Mitzrayim Grat Yamsuf. And so, therefore, Rav Mirsky said, anyone who saw those type of open miracles during the period of Mitzrayim in Egypt and Kriyat Yam Suf, Kishabikesha Kadosh Baruch Hu Litein Lahem Et HaTorah, Al Korcham Haya Aleihem Lekabla. When God offered them the Torah, of course they were going to accept it. Ben Ratzu, Ben Lo Ratzu, whether they wanted to or not, how could you say no to the God who has just done all of those things for you? B'derech Shehitaleich Imayim HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Batla da'atam bifnei ritzonam. The fact that God was with them led to them sort of nullifying their own thinking. They were overwhelmed by God, and of course they were going to accept what he offered. Kayotzi bazeh amar Rabbi Meir Simcha Midavinsk pasuk vayitatzru b'tachtit ha'ar, and then Rabbi Meir Simcha Midavinsk comes and reinterprets that midrash that says God held the mountain over them. It doesn't mean that God literally held the mountain over them, but it was like he was, because they had no real choice but to accept the Torah because they were so overwhelmed by God's goodness. It was too good to refuse without the horse's head in the bed, right? It was too good to refuse in a positive way. But that's not the case when it came to the Jews who accepted the Torah in the time of Achashverosh. They had no open miracles. They had no way of knowing for sure that God was with them. They could easily have explained everything as just Mordechai and Esther working the politics. But that's not what they did. They accepted the Torah and they did see God's hand in it. So on some level, their faith was greater than that of the people who left Mitzrayim, because they had to really work hard to see God, while the people in Mitzrayim and in the Midbar at Har Sinai didn't have to do any work to see God. So that's why that second Kabbalat HaTorah, says Rabbi Mirsky, is an upgrade, because it was total free will. In fact, there was no reason for the Jews to accept the Torah then. They could have said, "What do you mean? Where was God?" But instead, kimu v'kiblu, They accepted a second time what had been offered to them the first time. And that explains why Purim is not nullified, because Purim is Kabbalat HaTorah all over again. Right? It's not, but it's a special type of Kabbalat HaTorah. It's the Kabbalat HaTorah, which also comes with a voluntary recognition of God's presence. They had to use their imagination. Their religious muscles had to be stretched a little bit in order for them to see God's presence. And by doing that, Purim becomes almost an upgrade from the original Kabbalat HaTorah. So that's why Purim never goes away. Now, why do the other holidays go away? Right? How do we explain that? So let's first just review the first thing we said, which is Rabbi Gerson's suggestion, which is to say that the Torah is a this worldly document, and when Mashiach comes, it's going to be another world, and there are going to be different needs. We already saw that we're going to have this knowledge that's going to enable us to see the messages of the Torah without the need, the message of the Nevi'im, without the need for the Nevi'im. We'll see them embedded in the Torah itself. And that is a radical type of approach, which is not easy to swallow, but nonetheless, it is what the Maharal says. And now we have the Manot HaLevi. Manot HaLevi is a fascinating book. It was written by Rabbi Shlomo HaLevi Alkabetz, and he sent it to his father-in-law in 1529 in place of traditional Mishloach Manot. A few weeks ago in Shul, I asked the question whether or not you can fulfill the mitzvah of Mishloach Manot by giving someone a gift other than food. The consensus answer is no, but Rav Shlomo HaLevi Alkabetz felt that the answer was yes, and he wrote a commentary on Megillat Esther with his own approach, which was one dish, and also the approaches of the scholars who came before him, which was the other dish. So it's considered to be a package of two dishes, which is required for Matan Mishloach Manot, and he sent it to his father-in-law. And he called it Manot HaLevi. The portions, meaning two, which is required in Mishloach Manot, of Levi, referring to himself, or Shlomo HaLevi Alkabetz. Again, most people do not accept the position that you should fulfill the mitzvah of Mishloach Manot with books or anything other than food. But nonetheless, the backstory of this is important. And I'll tell you what he says outside without reading the entire thing. He says something interesting. He says there are two ways to understand the word batel, right? When the Gemara said that all the holidays are going to be batel, nullified, except for Purim and Yom Kippur, he says we have to be careful how we translate the word batel. Batel could mean gone, totally gone. He's not willing to accept that, because that's too radical. He's not on board with the Maharal. Batel also, though, can mean heavily weakened, right? As like batel b'shishim or batel b'rov. When food, non-kosher food, is nullified in the majority of kosher food or in 60 times kosher food. It doesn't mean that the non-kosher food is gone. It's just weakened so much that it's of no halachic consequence. And so says the Manot HaLevi, that's what batel means in that Gemara. It means that the holidays are still going to be around, but their overall power is going to be weakened because Mashiach came. And the arrival of Mashiach is going to override the joy of the Mashiach, right, is going to override anything that the holidays could have possibly brought. So batel doesn't mean that they'll be gone. It doesn't mean we're going to eat chametz on Pesach, and it doesn't mean that we're not going to sit in the sukkah on Sukkot. What it means is it's not going to be as impressive, because once Mashiach comes, that's going to be really impressive. Right? It reminds me of that Crocodile Dundee movie where he's with someone who pulls out a knife. And Crocodile Dundee says, "You think that's a knife? I'll show you a knife." And he pulls out like a huge machete, right? So I think that's what the Manot HaLevi is saying here. Pesach, oh, you think Pesach is about redemption? I'll show you real redemption. That's the Mashiach, right? You think Sukkot is about God saving the Jews in the Midbar? I'll show you real salvation in the Midbar, right? And so it doesn't mean that the olives are going to be gone. It simply means that they're going to be a little underwhelming compared to the world that we will be living in. So here too, the Manot HaLevi feels the need, right, to reinterpret what the Gemara says when it talks about that the challah is going to be batel. It needs to reinterpret it because it's just too radical of a concept for him to be comfortable with it. So it sort of, it's similar to the Kabbalat HaTorah, right? The first Kabbalat Torah was good, but the Purim Kabbalat HaTorah, that's really good. Salvation in the time of Mitzrayim, that's good, but salvation in the time of Mashiach, that's going to be really good. And Esther is still around. The Holly of Purim is still around because it was also a moment of total salvation, because the Jews were going to be killed, and as Marcia said earlier, and God saved them. So it's similar to the salvation of the times of the Mashiach. So those are the sort of two columns. What's special about the book of Esther and why it will be saved? What's special about Purim and that it will always be around? And how we're supposed to understand these sort of out of the ordinary radical statements that Esther and Purim will be nullified. And we saw a number of attempts at reinterpretation, reinterpreting what nullified means. We could also argue, I think, that the Maharal also reinterprets, but instead of reinterpreting what the word batel means, the Maharal is reinterpreting what the world is going to look like. And that allows him to explain these difficult and out of the ordinary gemarot as well. Okay, my friends, so that is the presentation for tonight. We're right on the money at 9:30. Any comments or questions before we all sign off?
I had two questions.
Okay, hey, Yitzi, go ahead, please.
So the first one is just kind of challenging the notion that either the holidays will be gone or that they will be diminished. So we say in the Musaf, every one of our Moadim, that, you know, may we re-experience when we're offering all these korbanot again for these specific holidays. So it's to say that and say either, A, they'll be gone completely or even diminished seems to contradict what we're davening for on those holidays. That's just an observation.
Okay. Yeah, that's a really, really good point. So when the Maharal was talking about the world being different, and we were not going to need. Yeah, that's a really good question. I have not seen the Maharal address that. And I'm not sure what he would say to your question. That's a really interesting point. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. And the second thing is, I don't know if anyone's talked about this, but the kind of equivalent holiday on an observance level and a timeline level that I think of compared to Purim is Hanukkah. And Hanukkah chronologically happens after Purim, when we in theory had already reaccepted the Torah. So I don't know if anyone has contributed thoughts about whether Hanukkah will still exist in the time of Mashiach or not, or if this is a just Purim, all other holidays both before and after are going to be nullified.
Right, that's great. Right, we don't know, right, because this statement was said before. Well, I, was this, the question is, was the statement made, it's Purim happened first, but were the statements made before Hanukkah? I'm not sure if we have if we have a way to know that.
Well, okay, yeah. I mean, it's the statement is coming from the Gemara, right?
Correct.
Okay. So, I mean, Hanukkah had certainly existed hundreds of years before the Gemara was compiled.
Right. Statements were made. Correct. Right, so it would be a second point. The statements were made by Chazal post the advent of Hanukkah.
Yeah.
And so it seems like it should apply. But you're right. Maybe it's only talking about biblical holidays. But yeah, at first that seems like it should apply because the statements were made after Hanukkah existed and was known about by Chazal. I mean, I guess you'd see the following Yom Ha'atzma'ut and Yom Yerushalayim.
Sure, yeah.
What about those? But it would seem like yes, because if the whole point is that these salvations are going to pale in comparison, then Hanukkah and Yom Ha'atzma'ut should also pale in comparison. I guess if the Mashiach is going to bring just salvation to everyone everywhere. But yeah, that's another great thought experiment.
All right. Yeah. Great. Interesting. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for the share.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? All right. Well, I wish you all a good night. Thank you all for joining. Next week we will not be on. Remember, we have a break, and then we're back in 2 weeks with the Shiur by Gandhi. So again, thank you all for joining. Have a wonderful, wonderful evening and rest of the week, and a good Shabbos.
Shkoyach, Rabbi.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.